Hello and welcome to Project Footballer episode 20. Today we have an amazing guest with us. They have won the Premier League twice. They have been with Man City, Everton, won an FA Cup, League Cup, playoff final with Wolves, 26 England caps. It's Jolyon Lescott. Welcome, Jolyon.
Thank you. Welcome.
And two Premier Leagues he's won.
Did I not say that?
Oh, you forgot the
main one.
Yeah.
It don't matter. It don't matter.
We were saying introductions are the hardest part. No, thank you for being with us. Yeah, so as you know, the episodes that we do are for parents mainly, helping their children become the best footballers that they can be. How did you get into football? What age were you?
Oof. First team was like nine, I think called Little League back then. It was like a local community like team or league, should I say. It was only six teams, and you played each other a few times throughout the season. The manager lived on my road. My brother played. He's 4 years older, so he was playing then. 9 till 12, and then it's called Interleague, which is like 12 to like 14.
Yeah.
And then hopefully by then you're into grassroots.
Okay. So what? So 9 was organised football.
Yeah.
But you must have been kicking a ball before that.
Yeah, I was a goalie back then.
Okay.
Yeah, like, again, I had a big brother, so he needed a goalie. So I kind of had to go in goal, you know what I mean? But just loved being involved in football. Again, I don't think positions were really a thing then. You just run around, didn't you?
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, we had my best mate and his brother, the same age as me and my brother, so I was also just always in goal. And then I was probably a goalie up until about, what, yeah, 9, 10.
Wow.
But talk us through that. So was it, so this is in Birmingham?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in Birmingham, got an older brother, and yeah, he's wanting to boot the ball at you.
Yeah, he was a striker.
So he's a striker.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was, yeah.
But what is this, in a cage, in park, garden?
Garden, everywhere. But mainly, we lived two doors away from a church, and they had like a football, or not football, well, we made it into a football pitch, but like they had a grass bit on the front, and they had, the bush was perfect size for like a goal. So that was the setup.
Okay.
So obviously when we played there, I would be in goal, but we were talking about it the other day, me and my brother. Like, we used to, on the landing upstairs in my mum's, where she still lives now, it was probably, now it's probably like three strides, if that. What we would play up there, we'd like rolled up socks for hours. Like, it was like Wembley, you know what I mean? Like, it was huge. And when we think about how we even stand up there now to how we was playing football up there with socks. But yeah, that's kind of how it started.
It seems to be a common theme with, so the fact that you had an older brother,
yeah,
is that what got you starting to play football?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I'm guessing most kids want to be like older brother.
Yeah.
So playing, seeing him play, having to go to training as well. Like, he was playing Aston Villa Academy, so having to go there like twice a week.
To being in the environment.
Yeah, and just seeing that. And that was when, like, he was there when before the training ground was there. So they used to train on Aston Villa, like, stadium car park. Wow. With, like, these plastic balls. Not like airflow balls that used to spin off, like, a harder plastic.
Yeah.
So if that hit you, it was real. It was real. But yeah, having to go there, and then obviously then just wanting to play myself and then developing that way.
And how involved were your parents with your football?
Oh yeah, huge.
Okay.
Huge. I've seen that as one of the questions, like the support, that they were the support, like, and in what way? They got me there every session. Like, I was thinking on the way down, I don't ever remember them missing the game.
Okay.
Like, wow. I remember them, like, there might have been times where you may go with your friend and then they would come for kickoff, and the next week you would bring them and they would come for kickoff. So you may delay the arrival, but they were there all the time.
Okay.
Like, yeah. And we had to go to each other's games. And like back then when I was, because I stopped playing for Wolves at what, 13, because you couldn't play Sunday League. But like, I would go to Wolves and then we'd go Sunday League after. So they would, like, literally the whole Sundays
just dedicated to
yeah
them.
So and it's only realizing now, because I've had kids, I've got kids in the system, knowing that is real, like, that's a real job.
Yeah. So were both your mum and dad very passionate about football?
Yeah and no. Okay. It's different now, like, it wasn't glamorized, the outcome wasn't scene, was it? It was just football.
Oh.
It wasn't like I say this all the time. Parents didn't know, kids didn't know what people earned, where they lived, what car they drove. It was just, you want to play football? And that was it. Didn't even know it was a real job. It was just something that you did. And my parents just knew I loved it. So they drove me there.
Okay. And so there's a local team, under nines. Who was the coach? Like, what do you remember about that first team?
So that team, Malcolm Grinham. The team was Grinham Giants.
Yeah.
So like basically...
Team was named after the coach?
Yeah, because he was a sponsor. So you chose... So
big ego.
Bit egotistical.
No.
That's what you'd do, Rob.
Yeah. That is something I do.
No, but every team was kind of similar because he dedicated his time to training and then obviously to... supplying the kit, so that was his kind of sponsor or his role in there, and his son played, but that was like a little, again, local thing that grew because then there was little leagues everywhere.
Yeah,
so I don't, there was some in London because our reps team, so like the best players out of our league would play, and we would go to tournaments, like little league tournaments, which every kind of district throughout England had one at one point. Okay. There was loads, yeah.
And were you committed to being a goalkeeper when you joined the team? Oh, then you came outfield.
I'm right winger now.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
What, cutting in?
What is it, seven?
That's the thing. I was left footed.
What?
I was right footed until 14.
Wow.
I didn't even know about left foot.
How did that happen?
I was just used to use my right foot. Never used to use my left foot. Never.
So when did that change?
Yeah, even now, there's things I can't do with my left foot. And there's things I can only do with my right foot and vice versa, yeah.
So what? Hold on. What can you not do with your left? Like, relatively.
Like, if I'm controlling it out of the sky, I would look to go with my right foot.
And how did that change?
I don't know. Honestly,
that is
I remember, like,
strange.
Up until there, 14.
That's so unusual.
I was using my right foot, yeah, and then it just went to, like, naturally must have felt more comfortable than using my left.
Manipulating the ball on the ground.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of that.
Well, yeah, when you were a right winger.
No, but in terms of that, like I could do everything with my right, and even like players I played with used to laugh, like throughout my career would laugh and say, "Why do you do that with your right foot? I can't do it with my left." Like if I was a goalie kicking it out of my hands, I can't kick it out of my hands with my left.
Oh my God.
I have to use my right.
That is insane.
Yeah.
So at this point, you're bombing down the right wing.
Yeah.
Hang on. So under nine, what is it, seven aside?
No, seven aside. This was before, like, pass back rule. You could pass it back to the goal and he could pick it up now.
No, but I'm just thinking, like, why there's a winger at under nine? Because, like...
It's 4-4-2. Everyone was all 4-4-2.
No, but what's, you're playing 11 aside?
Yeah. But you only played 11 aside.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
There was only 11 aside.
There was only 11 aside, yeah.
Those days.
That's what I mean.
How old are you? It's quite recent, though. Like, since small-sided football's come in, it's very relatively recent.
About 8-9 years, maybe?
Yeah, not a lot longer than that.
Yeah, not much longer than it was like 7 aside, 9 aside, and then...
11.
Yeah,
it was like crazy.
There was only 2 pitch sizes as well. It was like, we played on a condensed pitch, but after that...
I don't even remember that. I remember playing on a full-size pitch, full-size goals and
it's
midget goalie.
It's so bad for development. Like, that's how I'm... Like, it's actually hard to think
of. Why, though? Because it created footballers, so...
Yeah, but England, if you remember, England were behind technically for a lot of years.
Oh, yeah. And, but still, and some of the best players we've ever produced have come from that era.
Yeah, but if you remember all the tournaments that we were going to in those times, we were struggling to keep the ball.
That's different. That's a different style of play, though. I think we've always taught and played to score with every possession. That was never a thing. So is that the size of the pitch or is that just the way we were taught to play? Was like, I'll go and score every time. Every time we get into the half, can we shoot? Can we score? It was like, no, let's just keep possession. And I don't think them things were taught as well. Or appreciated.
But I think the logic is that if you're doing small-sided, there's going to be more touches of the ball.
Oh, I agree with it. I agree with that process now. I agree with that. But I don't necessarily think, again, there's not one way. I just don't believe there's one right way for every kid.
Okay.
And no one will convince me of that. That this should be the same way and everyone has to do that to develop because it's just different paces and different attributes.
Well, I mean, like you say, sometimes that sort of football can serve maybe the defenders, the centre-backs, or it could serve, if it's going like bypassing midfield, it's going straight to a striker, they're benefiting. If they're an athletic player, they're getting loads of touches of the ball. They're getting loads of coaching opportunities. So, but yeah, for our little midfielders, it's not playing through them. That's maybe why you struggled, Mark.
Maybe.
We've said on the podcast before, like, we think the current way, or I have anyway, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think the current way is a great improvement over 20 years ago in terms of producing technical players. Yeah. But I think it doesn't encourage centre-backs and holding midfielders who can receive the ball and stuff like that. I don't think it encourages that so much.
Yeah, again, I just think there's different... It will benefit different profile of player in different ways. Like, there's going to be elements of the game, like, say, the game is in first team level, that you can't develop in small-sided games. You can't. Like, it's just too fast.
I think it's really tailored to, like, wingers and...
Hence why we're getting that...
Converted fullback.
Yeah, hence why we're getting that kind of... Because the formation's alone, so if you was a fullback then, you was a wingback, which means now when you get into... the game, the seniors, you're used to overlapping them things. So again, it's, as I said, it's all relative to a certain extent, but I just, it's hard to just say, well, this is the right way for every position player.
I don't think there's a way.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's an easy way to develop every kind of player within one academy.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
So you're progressing now through the mini leagues. And so what age did you get scouted and who was it with?
Yeah. So I was playing now Sunday league as well.
Yeah.
I was the first team I got scouted for was Greenbourne. So that was like a local team, Sunday. We were Birmingham based, but the Birmingham League probably had, well, it definitely had better teams, better players.
Okay.
But they just weren't reliable. So we would turn up same and like people would come with like 9 players.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it just wasn't sustainable league. So we moved leagues to... a more kind of reliable league, but the level wasn't as high.
Okay.
It was South Staffordshire League. It was good, but again, it just wasn't the same as Brum. Like, I was playing against friends and we could go at it, you know, and it was tight, but the league was better because then we played every week. There was no games being called off. No fighting.
Right.
And then I got scouted at 11 to go to Wolves.
Okay.
But I'm a midfielder now, but Paul Lintz is like,
you've been everywhere.
Paul Lintz is my hero, you know what I mean?
Really? So, poster of him on your wall?
Yeah, my brother played I was coming into midfield now a little bit as well. So, not posters. No, we didn't have posters back then. Days. So it was just like, I just knew who he was. You know what I mean? I knew who Paul Lintz was.
Okay.
And my friend who used to travel with was left winger. So it was like Gigs and Ints, you know what I mean? We used to celebrate the same and do that little cheesy celebration.
Yeah,
and
stuff like
that. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to be like that and then went to Wolves. Left Wolves I was there for like a year or so, but then they wanted to put me at the back. I didn't really want to play at the back. So,
you were currently centre mid?
Yeah, I
was. And right footed or left footed at this point?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm right footed. I'm right footed still. And then, as I said, but I didn't know that was a thing. Like,
I can't believe it.
Yeah, we wasn't taught. Like, I would take free kicks and corners, either foot, whatever what it was. It was just innocent. Like, I'm not saying they were great, but it was just like, that was a thing then. And then went to Wolves, playing midfield.
Yeah.
Got scouted as a set of midfielder.
Yeah.
Playing there. Obviously, the level was different then to Sunday League. And then
was it a hard step up?
Kind of, yeah. Physically and technically. Or more tactically.
And what were you like physically at this stage?
I was all right. Physically, I've always been okay.
Right.
I've kind of known that I was never going to really struggle. And I've also I've been playing with my brother and his mates who were 4 years older than me.
Right.
For a long period of time.
So it wouldn't have fazed you?
Yeah. So like from 11, so that's senior school, I could play with men.
And what? At 11?
Like I would go... Like all the teams that, because our school had AstroTurf, which was the only one. So like everyone used to hire that and like train men's teams and stuff, whatever. Not the standard wasn't great, but it was men's teams. So I used to go after school, go back up there and just wait around for someone to say, come and have a game. If someone didn't turn up, I'd just be on there. So I was like from 4:30 till like 7 till youth club. I could just go and just sit on the Astro and just play for hours with different teams. But they were men.
Right.
And I could. Yeah, physically, that wasn't the thing that was letting me down.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Technically, I might not be good enough or whatever, but
all right.
That wasn't a problem. And then they set her off, missed a couple of weeks, Troy, and then they put me back there, man. I was just like, I never went back into midfield. Oh, I hated it.
Why? Really? Why did you not like defence?
Because it just restricted you. It wasn't defending or defence. I just wanted to run around. I wanted to be involved in every aspect of the game. And again, this was when it was like 4-4-2, so you had to do everything. You was involved in scoring and defending, so you wasn't just restricted.
Yeah.
So I wasn't good enough to play up front, but again, it was limiting you. So I just wanted to play midfield.
On reflection now, that experience through those ages of playing those other positions, would you say that it did help you as a centre-back when you made a career?
Probably, yeah. Now, probably looking back, but at the time, you're not seeing that. I'm not aware of all them things. I know naturally, I think, as a defender. And again,
learned that before you were moved there, or?
Yeah, my more instinct is, okay, yeah, how do I stop that rather than how do I create that? Okay. So I was kind of, yeah, again, thinking about it. I wasn't aware of it at the time. But
what was that process like with Wolves telling you, actually, we want to play you there? Because a lot of kids find it difficult to go, I'm this position.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not open to trying new things where it potentially could be better for them in the long term.
Well, that's the thing. So when they told me that, I played there for a while and then I said, I don't want to come back. Part of that was because I was signing. I was due to sign and then it was like, you could only play for Wolves. Then I couldn't play Sunday League. I was restricted for some certain school games. Could only play the district. I was like, so now I was going from like playing a year up or 2 years up in school and my year, then playing districts and Saturday League and Sunday League and Wolves. So I was playing like, I could play 4 or 5 games a week. Yeah. And then Wolves telling me I got to play one. I was like, nah. I love the game. I love to run around too much to only do that, regardless of my development. So I left and then I just went back to Sunday League.
What did your parents say about that?
Fine. My dad and my brother were like, are you sure? Because my brother was in the system, so they kind of knew what the training may help and what create. My mum was just like, well, as long as you're happy, it's fine. Step away. So I stepped away and then for like a year, 2 years, 2 seasons, just played Sunday League and then it was coming to the end of the year.
Sorry, but when you say you played Sunday League, but you got all the other football
I was playing
4 or 5 games.
So potentially that decision benefited you because you got more exposure, more hours of football.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, you can say that because it happened well for me. But again, yeah, if that's the right thing for everyone, who knows? But again, I went to then Bromsgrove, which is like semi-pro team.
And what age is this now?
So I'm like coming 15 now. So they want me to play for their first team. But I'm kind of leaving
15
school.
Playing in the first team and then?
It might have been, yeah, but like that. So I was going like, I'm kind of going back to Wolves now because going back, last year of school, or year 10, our school team is decent.
Yeah.
We all writ off for a trial at Derby.
Right.
We all got obviously in. Went through the trial. I got into Derby.
Yeah.
Me and another schoolmate. The first game of the season was against Wolves. So.
Centre mid still?
No, now. I know. So I have a career. My school teacher always was telling me, you're a defender. And I was like, I'm not a defender. So we got to a final at Villa Park. And he said to me, you're playing at the back. He said, if you play at the back, we got a good chance of winning because their best player was their striker.
Okay.
And I said, if you put me at the back, I'm not going to play.
Really?
So I played midfield and we lost. So then I started listening to him. I said, I don't want to play at Villa Park. I might never play there again and then be playing at the back.
Did the teacher say to you, you cost us the game?
No way. No way. All right. No. We had a good school team, so it wasn't just me.
But sometimes those lessons shape us.
Oh, yeah. It was a lesson. It was a lesson. I know I'm not a midfielder now. So I know in order for me to potentially have a career, I need to go at the back.
So you said earlier that growing up, when you first start, it's not necessarily thinking about the careers in football and that sort of thing. But now at this stage, at age 15, now you had started to realise
about what I want to do when I leave school.
Yeah.
So it's like, I just want to play football again. And I'm using the word career, but I didn't know that was the thing. Again, it was just, I just want to play football when I leave school.
Right.
Do you want to get a job or do you want to play football? And again, I don't know if you guys did the work experience thing at school where you go into a placement somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Year 10.
Yeah, yeah. So my placement was at Wolves.
Amazing.
So I'd went off to a trial, got in to Derby.
Yeah.
So I was going to Derby for 1 week and then Walter the second week, because again, after my first game of the season, Walter said, well, we kind of still have your registration, so would you mind taking another look? I was like, yeah. My dad was like, yeah, okay, my mum. So went to Wolves for the first week and I was going Derby for the second week. And after the first week, Wolves offered me a scholarship, or YTS.
Yeah.
So again, it was just like, well, yeah, why not? I'll just sign. And I could then told Derby. So Derby was offering me the same. And then my mum was like, well, you're not leaving home to go to Diggs, so you're going to have to get the bus to Wolves every day. So that was the decision made.
Was there a scout? You mentioned about the teacher, Les, who was telling you play defence.
Les.
And he was probably sounding like he's looking after you. But yeah, Les. So what's he, the Wolves scout?
Yeah, he's a Wolves scout.
So when you walked away from Wolves,
yeah,
he must have been pissed.
I don't know. No? I don't know. He was fine. I still see him when I went back to Wolves and I played and stuff. Like, he came to my debut and stuff. So he was still about...
were they not bringing up your mum all the time?
Well,
were they not?
Chris Evans, who's the youth development officer, academy director probably now, that's probably known as, he was still in contact with my dad.
Right.
But you couldn't just ring people. Like, people didn't have mobiles. And
yeah, right.
You didn't call in at your house phone and that. You know what I mean? So it was in contact, but it wasn't like every week. Because again, I don't know if they were sending scouts to games. And I wasn't looking to go back into an academy.
Right.
So it wasn't a case of, I'm leaving Wolves to go somewhere else. I just wanted to play every week, multiple games. Yeah. So then when I realised that that's what I want to do, that was kind of when it came about, and my mum and dad let me to do it my way. So like, literally writ off. We all sent a letter from our school, one of our lessons, to Derby, asked could we come on trial. And we all went on trial. Seven of the school team went on trial and two of us got through.
That's a good ratio, to be fair, for the school.
Nah, our school team was nice. school team was nice, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, that does sound like quite a smooth, because then you've then gone into Wolves Academy, and then how long before you actually got into the first team and had success?
So my year 11, so I was 15, coming up to 16. I was 15, yeah, because my birthday's August. So I might have been younger when I was at Bromsgrove. But yeah, so between 15 and 17, that was like a smooth, fast transition.
Right, yeah.
So I used to play for the youth team at year 11. So I was doing like day release then, which again wasn't normal in your year 11 of school. So I would just go into train with the youth team and then play on a Saturday. And then the following year I joined, and then that year was like playing. Like, if you played well up for the youth team, you'd then go and play for the reserves. You know what I mean? And then that was the transition. It was like, you play well. If you carried on playing well, you'd carry on playing for the reserves. If you didn't, you'd go back down and then start again. And that was the development. And then I had the best thing that happened to me, which probably didn't appreciate at the time, was a coach came called Terry Connor.
Right.
He's just gone into to Blackpool now. He came in and he was like our development coach for the transition of players that were coming into up to the first team. So it was like me, Keith Andrews, Matt Murray, a few other players that played some league games, Shane Tudor and stuff. But he was there and he developed me to become, just develop my mindset and help me become a player.
Okay. But so then you then got a first team call up.
Yeah. So I played 17. I played 16. We played Liverpool in a pre-season friendly, and it was funny. It was Emil Heskey, Michael Owen, Robbie Fowler was there, and I was 16.
Right.
And this was Steven Gerrard was on the bench for them. Like, Steven Gerrard wasn't even Steven Gerrard then, and only reason I knew him was because Lee Naylor, teammate of mine, had been in the younger age groups, and he said, "Oh, he's a player, him." So what's his name? He said, Steven Gerrard, he's unreal, because he played with England with him.
Right.
And then we kind of featured in that game together.
Yeah, okay.
And this is before scoreboards. Like, this is when you had to, like, hold it up. It was, like, wooden, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, I was oblivious to what that was.
Okay.
Like, that wasn't, like, a thing. Mm. So when I've come back in the dressing room and the lads, like, the senior pros are like, did you keep your shirt? I'm like, no, I've just put it in the wash. Like, that's your debut shirt, you need to get that. I was like, I don't know what that is. And...
What's the biggest change from going, you know, just wanting to play football and playing youth team to then going into reserves and first team element? What's the biggest change?
Oof.
In mindset and...
Yeah, it was just probably the understanding that
because it's now you're starting to become a profession.
Yeah, that's it.
So instead of just being fun and it's football, so what's the biggest change?
I don't know if I could actually pinpoint that, but it was just the transition of being made aware that it's serious and there are consequences and you will get punished if you make mistakes, whether they're small on the pitch or life decisions that impact you. Yeah. So it was just constantly being aware, and I had great people around me, still got them. So that was probably the biggest help. But there wasn't one thing when I thought, oh, this is it. Yeah. Like I said, when I was told I was going to start the season, like my first season, like I said, I was so innocent to the thought process. Like, everyone's congratulating me. I'm thinking, I don't even, why? I've been playing for you, like the last pre-season, 4 games in pre-season.
Yeah. Mm.
So then when the first, like, game of the season's team's announced and I'm in it, I was probably going to be more, not in an arrogant way, probably more surprised if I'm not in it, because I just played the last 4 games in pre-season, but now I realise that's still a big thing. Mm. So I'm 17 and I'm being selected to play.
I find it fascinating where we all know youth players who are extremely talented, but then when they go into those scenarios where it's you have to be professional and whatnot, and they struggle with the concept it's now a career.
Yeah.
Was there any teammates of yours that were super talented at the youth level but didn't quite make that transition?
There would have been. Yeah. I think my best mate, actually, one of my best mates from school, Warren, he was a mad talent, and he went to Cardiff, and we spoke about it recently, within the last 12 months, about how he struggled to transition from that. But in Wolves, I think my generation of players were probably more suited with the mindset. I think there was probably less talent in the greatest respect to today's generation, but we were stronger mentally than this generation on a whole, not individuals. I think there's more talent now.
It's really interesting to hear the way that you speak about the journey, because you're very, very relaxed about it. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that you just dropped out of Wolves Academy just of your own choice, just to play more football. But maybe this approach, like, aided you.
Oh, 100%. Really? Like if I fast forward to, I got injured. So kind of got injured at 21. Yeah. So I had my cartilage removed, but wasn't told how serious it was. Just told that it's, you have an operation, woke up. Both knees had been operated on. It was fine. Okay.
What age is this?
21. So I'm 20, 21, yeah. So, and then the doctor said to me, it's quite serious, this. Like, you're going to have to focus. This is what made me probably the best professional. This was probably the biggest transition of my professionalism. Because at this point, I'm still playing on talent. Like, physically, I can cope. I'm meeting KFC whenever I want, because that didn't hinder me. And then all of a sudden, oh, you're carrying this much weight. It's going to impact your joints. So now I'm conscious of that, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I want to play. I need to have a career, so I need to change certain things. So this is kind of an example of how simple I thought. It was like, well, it hurts now. So if I was told, you do these things, it won't hurt. If it doesn't hurt, then there's no excuse why I can't perform the way I performed before. And that was as simple as it was. So I just did the stuff so it didn't hurt. And then I wasn't allowing myself any excuses if it didn't go well. And then that's how simply I took to it, and then applied that kind of throughout.
Yeah.
I kind of held myself to account before anything else.
It's really interesting, because sometimes players maybe like choke with the pressure, and you've talked about that debut game, but you're just like so chilled out with stuff.
But then things wasn't glamorised then.
Oh, right.
Like, you got to think now, it's different now. Like, you got to understand.
Spotlight.
There's pressures that come with this generation that I never had to cope with up until going to Everton.
Mm.
Like, to the point of where I went to Everton and there's a couple of players didn't even know what position I played in.
Mm.
And I'm 24, played hundreds of games, you know what I mean? Where you know what a 17-year-old's up to now.
Yeah.
Due to the spotlight or the recognition they can get.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was like, I go back to, you never knew where anyone lived. You never knew how much money they earned, and you never knew what car they drove. So that was, couldn't be your motivation because you didn't know what that was. And it couldn't be a distraction because you didn't know what that was.
So it had to be just the love.
It's just the love of the game. It was just you wanted to play. All I wanted to do was wear a football kit on a Saturday afternoon.
Hmm.
That's as simple as it was. And that was my ambition, to becoming a footballer.
It's a bit scary how young kids are aware of how much.
But also the parents. Now. The parents is the responsibility.
Yeah, the Instagram
for that.
Stuff.
Just that. Just when I go to watch, and I've been watching my kids, and I see the kind of the way it probably means more to them than it should do to the kids. I'm like, oh, it's dangerous that. Yeah. Because again, they can see my son can earn X amount a week. And I've worked with players at Man City that as soon as they were earning a couple of £1,000 a week, family members are retiring. Like, that pressure is wild. Mm. It's wild. So I never had that. You know what I mean? My mum's still active now. She's still working. So that was never a thing. The things that probably hinder some people now and apply more pressure to the younger generation, I never had them.
And the injury at 21... was this your first real obstacle?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
But it's funny how it helped you make the transition to becoming professional. That one was the first real setback or, you know, obstacle.
Yeah, that is so interesting because it's almost like the sort of the chilled out attitude and mindset helped go to so far. But then if that had continued on, then you might not have had the professionalism to go and make the career that you had.
Yeah.
So maybe
sure it would impact you, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, but it never had to. Like, I never
had to think about it.
Yeah, because I'd always been okay. If I'd gone to the Premier League before I'd got injured, I probably would have had to do them things because the level I was playing at and my ability wasn't the same. So if I'd gone to the Prem, the level would have been higher than my ability. So then I have to make changes. Where in the Championship wasn't really the case. I could get away with certain things because I was ever going to have, I was probably going to be stronger, faster, technically or tactically. One of them elements, I was going to be better than you at, and I would quickly assess what that was. Like, the best player I played against was Louis Saha.
Really?
Because he was the first player that ever made me realise I'm better than you at all of these things.
Really?
At one time. And I'd never...
And how old were you when you played him?
So I was playing him. Again, he helped me a lot by that performance. I was 18, 19. So he was at Fulham. When Fulham had that mad season.
Him and Bournemouth.
But he was the sub that would come on. So we played them a few weeks before. They'd averaged 2 goals a game. And this was before you can analyse teams. There wasn't no footage coming in. It was just like you'd seen the fixtures before, maybe a couple corners. We played them. He was top goal scorer. So I knew I had to be serious about it. So we'd go into the game. So he'd never seen me. I'd never seen him. We played them in the league. It's the first time they dropped points, I think. 0-0. I get man of the match. Fast forward 3 weeks, we played them in the cup. So I'm thinking it's the same. He's thinking it's not the same. He showed me up. He made me know. He really made me know there was another level to being a whole player. And I was like, that was the first time I'd ever experienced someone being better than me at everything I thought I was good at. I was like, okay. So that kind of helped me a lot.
But your mindset to that was, all right, well, I'll just go and work hard. And you're like, okay, I'll
be
better.
That was always, and I've got my mentor, TC, who was around me, that was helping me understand that in a way that I didn't appreciate at the time. But he was helping me understand that you can always do more. There's always more to be done. Like, the excuses aren't there. There's no such thing as, there might be a reason. There shouldn't be an excuse.
Would your parents have contributed to the mindset that you had?
Yeah, because my mum, again, I remember my mum saying to me when I started, because again, my brother was in the system, so we knew. I mean, I was aware how hard it is. It's not easy going into an environment, and back then was probably you at 16, 17, you're around adults. Like, the academies are separate now, so you might not learn to become a man until you're in that environment, and it might be 20, 21. Where 16, 17, you were around men. Learn fast. Like, learn that you can say stuff or you can treat you a certain way and it be okay for a certain extent. And I'm not saying it's okay, some of the stuff that's happened in academies, but my mum was like, well, as long as these things ain't happening, you do what you're told.
Really?
That was it. So I was like, okay. And again, I had a brother that was in the system that would make me aware that watch out for these things. These things are banter and stuff like that. And
when you say your brother in the system, was he in an academy as well?
Yeah, he was at Aston Villa.
Oh,
so he played with Merce.
Oh, Villa. Of course. Yeah. Okay. And did he end up making that as pro?
Yeah, he played. My brother he played for Aston Villa, Sheffield Wednesday, Stockport, and Bristol.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. And Walsall. Yeah, so, yeah, he was, as I said, so I was aware of what was potentially coming
due
to that. But in regards to resilience, also got run over. So whether I know that or not, subconsciously, that would have helped. Getting teased at school, scars and stuff like that.
What age did that happen?
Five.
You're age five?
Yeah, I was five. So, again, all them things impact.
Shape, yeah. Helped
all them
shape,
things.
Yeah.
Was that, are you all right to talk about that? Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, like, was that outside, it was outside your school or something,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, so outside my junior school. So, yeah, like, right in front of my mum kind of thing. She'd come to collect me and then, yeah, got knocked over. Lollipop lady got, I think, stepped out, I think. And then car that was coming from the left didn't slow down. She stepped back and I was obviously in the road and then kind of happened that way.
And then how long were you out of football?
Football? I was out. Like, there wasn't anything I was doing. I was in coma for a while.
Fuck.
I was in hospital for ages.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, there wasn't... Football wasn't a thing then.
No.
I don't even think I was playing then anyway, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that wasn't... Football was the least of our concerns.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. But yeah, would you... Yeah, in some ways, could that experience have, like, shaped you in some ways of, like, building out resilience, building out...
Potentially, yeah. I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
But, yeah, of course, yeah. I would say you'd like to think everything that has happened to all of us is the reason why we are
how we are. Yeah.
No, that's amazing hearing that. I like... When you hear a footballer that, you know, won the Premier League twice, and then, you know, I'm so fascinated by the journey of, like, you know, how it happens to make that career. Going into, like, your children, you've got three children.
Yep.
Two boys.
And a girl.
The boys play football. Tell us about them, a bit about their journeys.
Yeah, so... Oldest is just turned 19, youngest 15. Oldest has had a natural ability from whenever. Like, he could do stuff that five or six, I was like, man, you shouldn't even know how to do that, how to position your body and stuff. And then
really?
He just kind of had something, academically clever. So we never really pushed the football. Really, so we just played, and then we kind of pushed more academically for him at senior school, and then he made the decision of wanting to play. Played Sunday league, got scouted. Never really pushed them into teams I was playing for. Just kind of, well, if it's going to happen, you get scouted and you go down that route. Got scouted at 15, went to Bury. They kind of dissolved in administration. He was only there for a few months, and then it was like leaving school kind of thing. So it was like, well, if you want to get a scholarship, you're going to have to go on trial. Went to Burnley. That didn't work out. And then Salford offered him something.
At what age?
Year 11.
Scholarship.
So scholarship. So it's year 11. And then, so that was in like the January, and this was just before COVID, so what was that, 19? Is it 19, 20? 19, whatever.
20 was COVID started.
Yeah, so went there. So he's only really been in the system about 4 years, really.
Right.
Seems like it's a similar approach to sort of parents,
quite chilled out. 100%.
Like organic. And
I would never, like I've said this many a time, I would never risk my relationship with them over a career. Like, if you want to play, cool. Then I'll take you wherever you need to be if I can and stuff like that. Mum will take you. But, like, it's not going to be on me. You will not make it because I haven't supported you in the way that you need me to support you, kind of like my parents did for me. Like,
is that also because, obviously, you've had that journey and you know what it's like, how tough it can be, so you're never going to put that pressure on them? Do you reckon if you hadn't been a footballer, you'd still have the same approach?
I'd like to think the same approach, because it's the relationship. The career is irrelevant. It's the relationship I've got with them and would never risk.
Yeah.
Like, I did something recently and I was saying about Andre Agassi, and he never spoke to his dad for years, like 2 decades.
We did an episode of Sonny Pike. Do you remember Sonny
Pike? Yeah, I know the name. We did an episode
of him, and he doesn't talk to his dad since he was 14, 15, something like that.
And
his dad overpushed him.
That's what I'm saying. And I know people that I've played with, players that the same. Fell out with their parents. I was like, no way. Like, I don't want that. I'd rather we'd be friends and we talk about what if, rather than you enjoying that and I'm going to watch from afar. Nah, that's not a thing.
Is there anything that you would have done differently with the journeys of your
children? Yeah, I probably would have...
Football?
Yeah, so my oldest, as I said, he probably could have had a straighter journey in the game if we'd have... If I'd have not abused it, but just like put him into academies and kind of pushed that. But again, I was never wanted that because I was at the risk of, one, him blaming me for not being able to go out and see friends three, four times a week. Not that he was doing that, but if he wanted to do that, he could. But if you're at an academy, you know it's five times a week.
Yeah.
And you're limited to what you can do other than football. So I didn't want to hinder that. If he wanted to do that, great. If you don't, then it's fine by me. Like, it's not going to impact how we come out, communicate with each other or how we are with each other if you don't play football.
Yeah. Mark Noble said to someone recently, he was saying he doesn't want his kids to play football.
He doesn't want them to play. So I'd love my kids to play.
It was something like this. It was something that he said that there are more lows in football than there are highs, and he actually doesn't want them to be in, have a career in it.
The highs outweigh the lows. There's lows, but there's lows everywhere. And I say to them now, I say, you're lucky that you can do something that you enjoy. I said, there's so many people that don't enjoy what they do and they have to do it. I said, there's going to become a day when, like now, I love what I do now, but it's not feel like playing. Like, it's no comparison.
Yeah.
You get to play. You get to put boots on every day and go and play football.
There's so many people in the world, I would say, whose favourite thing is to play football. Not just people playing at the top level.
Everyone that goes to a game goes because they love it, every fan. We were just the lucky ones that made it. That's all we were. We're just lucky fans that made their profession.
Seeing when you see Casemiro going mental when Man United score,
and maybe not that fans. Game. But, but yeah, I know what you mean. As I said, we are all fans of the game.
Yeah,
we were just lucky enough to get through the process and have a career.
So going back to your son's journey, we were talking, he didn't work out at Burnley.
So he didn't work out at Burnley. So we went to Salford on trial. They offered him, literally, he went on trial the first session, then they offered him. He said he wanted, I said, do you want to sign? He said, yeah. So, yeah, he wanted to sign there. And it was kind of the setup was kind of decent, to be fair. It was class of 92, obviously, Neville and all that involved, and Nicky Butt and Chris Casper. So the setup was kind of what they were portraying was great. And then COVID came and then they changed it all around to it was so reduced. I was ooh. But at this point, it's too late to go anywhere now. And again, I wasn't going to give him an excuse of this is the reason why if you don't make it, this isn't the reason. If you do what you're supposed to do, you will have a career.
Okay.
So we wasn't using that as an excuse, but I knew that wasn't how it should be.
Fair enough.
So you earn the right to go elsewhere and then we'll go elsewhere. And he literally went from not playing in the first year to being a captain.
What was reduced about Salford?
Just what they promised. Again, COVID was, whether it's a reason or excuse, who knows, but it wasn't what they said. And to a certain extent, it's kind of fortunate that my son was there because I could then speak to them and say, this isn't what was promised, to the point of where they wanted to dissolve the academy.
Really?
4 days before they're due to start pre-season.
Oh my God.
Really? And I spoke to them and it wasn't you've ruined my lad's career. I'm saying it's quite clever. So we've passed on colleges. He can't even go to college now because of the cut-off dates. The kind of registry dates were missed. So this needs to be resolved kind of thing. So that was kind of my focus. Obviously, luckily, I'm able to speak to people that other parents ain't. Can't get hold of.
Say that.
So kind of got resolved. And they kind of honoured the contracts. But it was never really the same. So I was this is you now. You got what you wanted. But luckily, in a way, he's not aware of what it should look like. So this is as best as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know what was promised and what was said and how academy should look. And no, this is the best it's going to be.
He's still in that mindset. I just want to play football.
Play football. Thing, yeah. And if you want to play football, you do the best you can. And then we figure it out as it goes. And as I said, he earned the right to go elsewhere. And He's doing all right now.
Cool.
Mm. And then the young one. No. Yeah, he's at Blackpool. Yeah, he's done at Blackpool, who Mick McCarthy and TC just got the job at. And okay. So it's funny because, like, TC, I wouldn't have seen him. My mentor, I wouldn't have seen him for 10 years or so.
Full circle.
It's mad, yeah, it was mad.
It's and he's mad. A winger.
Yeah, TC was like, TC's a forward, so he would help him a lot. But as I said, he's got to earn the right to get to that level first. You know what I mean? He's still in the 23s, so
yeah,
he gets on with that. Where the young one's been in the system.
Yeah, okay.
The young one's been in the system since 10. And it's funny with him because he loves it. He loves just playing. So he's more like me, just want to play every day. He would play every day. And just only do that.
How old is he now?
He's 15.
15 now.
And
what clubs has he been at?
He's only been at Stoke. So Sunday League, right. Sunday League got recruited, like, or scouted, and went there. And I was away for the trial, for the first part of the trial. So he told him he was a striker. I'm like, you're not a striker. But he was on trial for like 5 weeks. But I let him start saying, go on, do you think? Like, if you want to be a striker, you'll be a striker. And then if that doesn't work out, then you have to go back to Sunday League. And bearing in mind, he's got scouted. He hasn't even got scouted as a striker. But he told him he could play up front. So I said, go on, enjoy it. And he scored like, he must have scored like 20-something goals. I'm thinking, maybe you are a striker.
Ah, okay.
And then he got signed after the trial as a striker. He played 2 games. I said, you won't play up front again. He's like, why not? I said, you're not really a striker, mate. And then he went back, and that's him now. He plays midfield, okay. Like, or defence. He played centre half and midfielder, but he's not a defender. He's a midfielder, from what I see.
I'm fascinated.
How's he scored all those goals?
I don't know. They dried up. When the ink was dry, the goal's dried up. But he's more efficient in midfield, way more. Yeah.
I'm fascinated in like the sort of conversations you are having with your sons. Yeah. So, let's say after games and when it's going well or when it's not gone so well.
So the conversation I have now with my older one, I've probably been having with my younger one a lot longer. Mm. Different. They're totally different. They see the game.
He's more engaged. The younger one's more
engaged.
It's not
even that he's more engaged. They see the game different. Like, yeah. When I watch stuff with my younger one, he sees it kind of the way I would see it, where my older one is like, nah, I see that.
Do you mean from a defensive mindset, where you said earlier, you're more of the...
Yeah, but also just the detail. Okay. So, like I said, my son, my oldest one, physically, he's like me. So I've been taking him to play with, like, say, me and my brother and friends and men. He could probably play at, like, 13, 14. When the younger one now is 15, he could probably just come now. So they're different. Physically, they're different. And ability-wise, it's not the same. They have totally different attributes that allow them to play in the positions they play in. So I just have different conversations with them and make them aware of different things. So, yeah, the conversation of how they done is different. And I've learned now to, when they get in the car, how this is going to go. So we're not talking about it. Cool. You put your headphones in. We won't talk about it. But then don't complain. Don't tell me that something was bad because you could have done more. It's like, if you lost, then you're upset. Well, what did you do? You know what I mean? It's kind of just like understanding, well, you're responsible for these things. And if you're happy with the way you've done them, it all that matters.
Like, we have like a kind of a running theme that Sean always likes to push, which is on the podcast, nature versus nurture. Ooh. With your two kids having such like different characteristics when they play, how do you think that happened? Because Sean thinks it's all nurture, everything's all nurture, whereas I think, we both think there's more talent natural talent involved than what Sean does.
I think there is natural talent, but it's in different attributes that you can see.
Like, how do you think they developed such different attributes?
I think there are natural elements to that.
Yeah.
So, but because you can see certain attributes, I'm not saying this isn't about like my kids, this is about how I would view the game, like, or players. We only judge players on the attributes we can see, where decision making for me is the most important thing.
I agree.
It's the only thing that kind of relates all the best players of any generation and any position. Like, they all had that in common. They wasn't all the fastest, all the strongest, the best, technically best. They all made the best decisions, but the best decisions were based on their attributes and the attributes of the opponents they played against. So we see balls being played to Haaland that couldn't be played to Sergio Aguero. So So what would that be, an assist for Sergio? No, but I know I can pull it there for Haaland. So that's the kind of way I would view it. So they are all natural to a certain extent, but you can develop. And there's got to be a cap. Like, it's funny how...
Oh, 100% you can develop, by the way.
But there is also a cap. So, for instance, when I talk about decision-making, and that's like kind of a, obviously, a mental aspect of it.
But it's still a skill.
It's still a skill, but if I'm saying to you tomorrow, do this, we expect it, because it's not a physical attribute, we expect it to be different tomorrow, but I would never say to you tomorrow, be faster. You would never say that. You would never expect someone to just be faster or stronger tomorrow, but we're saying if it's a decision, don't make that decision again.
Yeah.
No, there's a process to developing that ability not to make that mistake again. Mm. And it's understanding that there still can be a cap. There's only so certain how fast you can be, how strong you can be. So if he makes the best decision 7 times out of 10, that might be the cap.
Yeah.
You just have to reduce the amount of times he's in that situation to impact the outcome.
When I'm listening to you describe the differences of the two boys, and you're saying the other one was, the older one's bigger and has been bigger physically or stronger.
And he's not bigger though. So like my young one now is just shut up.
Okay.
So he's just got my size now and he's 15.
But starting
just
out.
Just developed earlier.
Okay. But physically, so again, this is something I'm learning, sorry. So like the maturation thing, like my oldest one was strong before he was big, and then he grew. And then he's made his body work because he was stronger before he was tall.
Yeah.
Where my other one got tall and was still a boy.
Right.
And now he's getting his strength. So now he's learning how to use and move his body. So they were just developed at different speeds.
But you said that the older, stronger one, he's not as technical as the...
No, he's technically. He's not as tactical.
Not as tactical.
He's technically... He's technically better than say
the older
me.
Boy. The older boy is the one.
Yeah, he's a winger. He's got a more natural talent. You can see. Yeah.
All right.
So if you've seen him, you'd say he's got something where
the one.
If you've coached, and you play no football, you would like, oh, he knows stuff. But it wouldn't be stuff to everyone because it's stuff that you don't see,
intricate,
and you can't physically see him scanning and putting himself in a position to receive the ball from everyone, where the winger's receiving it in bad areas at times, but he's able to get out of them. So they're the things you see.
But see, my belief, sorry to interrupt, but my belief is that maybe the younger one had to develop his scanning and his game understanding to be effective, whereas the older one, because he was strong, and he could be effective when he played with your brother or the adults, and so he didn't necessarily need to develop the...
I think, yeah, maybe, but again, going back to, say, my young one, when he was young, like, he would find space early. When kids were just running around, and I'm thinking, why are you pulling out there? Just go and just run. Don't worry about the tactical side of it. Like, I remember watching a game with him. It was a United game.
Yeah.
United v Arsenal. And the defender did something. I'm thinking, why didn't he just do that? And he said it to me. I reckon he was 9. I'm like, yeah, you watch the game differently. If you're seeing that, you're just watching it different. You're just not paying attention to the stuff that everyone else is seeing. You see the detail at 9, which is probably, again, but technically he doesn't move like my old one.
Just on what you said about he wasn't forced to develop that. Not everyone that needs to develop something can. So I think there is a massive natural element in it as well. The other thing I was going to say is we're going to do a future podcast soon with Steve Lawrence, who coaches at Ajax or coached at Ajax?
No. He's worked with the Ajax coaches.
Okay, but
he's done a lot of. He's done 20 years of research on.
Yeah,
age banding.
Yeah. So
oh, okay.
I was just going to ask when your kids are born, because
stats
for players being produced later in the school year is crazy.
You said you're.
I'm August. Yeah. So again, August.
Yeah, but it's not like completely even into like. It's
I've seen that because now again working. The FA, I see how stuff is done, and it's just learning that. Again, I was oblivious to all that. Didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Profiling, recruiting through profile, obviously age banding and seeing well. But when it's explained to you, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Like
if
you've got 12 months or 11 months, would it say, a school year, up to 11 months more development, especially academically in school, you're going to be exposed to more, and you obviously you're able to learn a bit faster, then it's going to have an impact.
So you're kind of saying there's no real way around it.
No, and again, but it's not guaranteed for everyone.
No.
Is it Messi, Neymar's birthday in July?
February.
June, same age as Micah, their school years are different.
Yeah, he's like so in Argentina. It's January, starts January.
January.
He wasn't at the end of the year.
Yeah, he's not end.
So he's middle. But he spent most of his time in Spain, though.
Yeah, that's true.
No, in Europe it's the same. It's Europe. January.
And, oh, okay. But as I said, there's no one way
that
allows everyone to benefit. Because again, you could be missing out on someone or someone slowing down someone's development that you've restricted by the change. Do you know what I mean? If you change it to a certain way, now someone's slowed down their development. It's just choosing which way it is.
What would you say to parents who have that issue with like kids born later? Is there anything you can think?
So what's late? Like, I'm late. August.
Yeah. You're late in England.
It's like a year's disadvantage almost against some of the kids you're competing with for.
And I think it's different now as well because they start earlier.
Yeah. What would I say to the parents? In the greatest respect, that isn't going to be the reason.
Okay.
That isn't going to be the reason why your son doesn't.
Do you not think though, because of, I haven't actually seen the numbers. I'm not saying the sole reason why one individual kid doesn't make it, but the stats are like quite. You've seen them, haven't you? It's quite like the disparity between kids making it from September to August is a big one. Like it's disproportionate.
Yeah, I think in that aspect, then okay, I understand. But if you're saying, well, the decision process is going to be made at the same time as their development. So if we're the same school year and I'm 10 months younger, your decision whether you're keeping me should be in 10 months' time. It shouldn't be in the same season because you've had 10 months longer to develop from the start. So I get they should change that process. You can't just, as I say, we judge them all on the same outcome, but you've had longer to develop.
So when I speak to some parents, and obviously some parents, you've got a dog in the fight. If your kid's born in August or July or June or whatever, you've got a dog in the fight. But they will say that they think the academies are too focused on results right now.
Oh, yeah.
Academy
football should only be development.
Yeah.
Should only be that, but it's not. Because the academy's focus may be on that, but you're also understanding the coach of the age group focus might not be on that, might have ambitions of being first team managers aren't known for developing players. They're based on results.
Yeah.
So you kind of then have to get results.
It really happens, like even like at a like unconscious level.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think any coach thinks they're doing this, but they are too focused on results.
There'll be like banter between the coaches where it might be like you did it recently. You didn't even mean to do it, but it's like it's with Banner Ali. Ali lost all the games at the tournament. Or not, he didn't. He got the worst results out of the other coaches.
It was banter between the coaches,
you're going to buy dinner for the other coaches.
Because you got the worst results. So that was the outcome.
But even if that's banter, it seeped in. And now next time, that coach might be thinking,
making decisions based on results.
Yeah.
Which is hindering someone's development.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a definite problem.
The FA and the clubs are really aware of this data. They're trying to
It's different when you kind of try, because you can try and resolve it our end or in our country. But how does that impact then when other countries ain't doing the same thing? Like, we've had to change because other countries have been doing it for years now. So I know that when academies go overseas, it's birth year, isn't it? It's like birth year tournaments.
Yes, yeah, so yeah, January.
Yeah, to, which I so. Never, that wasn't a thing. So.
Ah, so when English teams go abroad, we adjust the teams.
Yeah, okay.
We really care about the result.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but we care about.
Well, you wouldn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it. But again, is it hindering someone? Because again, if you're older, so say if they're doing it January to January overseas, but we're taking lads that are further developed. And when he's going over there, he could be developing bad habits because it's too easy. So it's fair if you just do January to January or whatever.
I wanted to go back to when you were talking about the car journeys with the kids, because you said that you've had to learn.
Oh, yeah. How like, are they?
Well, like, have you had some bad experiences in the car where you've had a go at them?
I never, again, have a go. Yeah, I probably would be harder on them. But it's always because you think they can do more.
Okay.
It's helping me understand that he's a kid. Like, but yeah, the car journeys have changed now. They're like my older one, I probably wouldn't speak to him in the car. Text.
Really?
Because it's better. He's better at communicating that way. I get more detail that way.
Ah.
Where the young one, like the other day he played, he did all right. And I knew we were going to talk.
All right.
Yeah, because he wants to talk.
Oh,
so
I
it's just knowing them. That's nothing to do with them as kids, as personalities. I know. Like me and my oldest could sit in a car from Manchester to London, not speak, and it'd be fine. There'd be no issues with us, no radio on, nothing, and it'd be fine. It'd be calm, a nice atmosphere. Well, I don't think I could do that with the young ones. They want to speak. So it's just knowing my kids more than anything. It's not knowing how to kind of talk to a kid, any kid, after a bad game. It's like, no, my kid needs this.
Yeah. And have you had to have any difficult conversations?
Oh, yeah. I have them all the time.
Yeah.
I'd say to them, like, so next year is... the year my youngest is going to get told if he's a scholar. And my oldest is second year pro is up, so he's going to get told if he's getting kept. So I said to them the other day, literally, like, in 12 months' time, you're going to be told whether you're getting a new contract. Like, for you, it's a job. And for you, we don't know, because we don't know if the trial's there. So that's so at the end of that 12 months, if you've done everything you said you could do in order to be better, it's not a problem.
Yeah, but
you can't be blaming anyone.
No.
So if you know there's something you need to get good at, what are you doing to get good at it? Mm. And then it kind of developed into, well, I want to get good at this. Okay, well, that will we work towards. At least you know what you need to improve, so then we can work towards that. But don't let me tell you need to do this or you want to do that and then you don't know how to do it. Because if it was a cheat code on FIFA, you'd be online and you'd look it up. You'd find a way to resolve that problem. If it's something that you need, it's online. There's training techniques. It's like if you want to improve something, you type it in online. There's methods.
Yeah, that's to crazy develop it. Difference yeah. now to so long.
That's what I'm saying. So when I was young, sorry, like you, it wasn't a thing. Yeah. Like there was no Wi-Fi. So I remember I had to write down the sessions at home because you couldn't do it on your phone. And then I would go into training with the sessions I've written down to do the strength sessions to make me quicker, say whatever, and then work it towards it that way. Where they've got your phone, so there's no excuse.
Do they lean on you? Because obviously they know who that is. Or
not really.
No.
For boots, yeah. But now, as I said, it's different now. I can have different conversations with them about it. So probably they're more receptive to know that there's definitely going to be a conversation after the game, whether it's straight away, a couple of hours.
Or by text.
Or yeah. So like my lad, my oldest, he's been playing well and then he had a bad game. And he did something, I was like, but I knew. So when we got there, I said to his mum, he's going off. About 60 minutes, he'll be off. 64 minutes, his number comes up.
How early did you call that?
In the warm-up.
Oh, really?
I knew him. I could just see.
Wow.
I could just see.
God.
Yeah, I knew in the warm-up. This wasn't his day.
Okay, fair enough.
And then after, but again, then you go to the game and then there's a moment in the game where he did something that probably only he could do. And I'm saying that's not a thing. Like, you were coming off because of the other stuff that you didn't do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's understanding and that. So that's took a process because he's always had the moments. He just didn't have the substance, the foundation.
That is such invaluable information because, you know, for you to give that to your son, like the ordinary parent, it's going to be hard for them to...
I was actually going to say that. Would you advise to your regular parent who's not been a footballer or got good football knowledge, would you advise them to have these sorts of conversations with their kids?
Yeah, but you got to learn what that conversation is. Like I said, I'm lucky I know what that is. But if you break it down to a simpler format, there's probably, three other people on the pitch playing the same position as your son. What are they doing that yours isn't doing? And if they're all doing similar things and then your son can do something that only he can do, then he's going to progress.
Mm.
But there needs to be a minimum that, well, these two or these three are doing this. My son doesn't do that as often. He's not reliable in that situation or he doesn't recognise that. So then it's like, well, he's third best out of the four on here. So, you know what I mean?
Especially in England, like, so many people think they're a football expert.
I'm glad you got to this.
Yeah,
because I was saying, I'm in group chats.
All right.
With players, friends. And I had to say to them, football is the only industry that people that have never done it are experts.
Mm.
We don't watch films
and
say, you might say that's a crap film, but he's not a crap actor, or his accent's poor, or his clothes are crap, or this, that, it's the film's bad. Like, so you can say the game's poor, but then to critique the individual based on what you've seen, having never have done it, like, I just find it so wild.
It is wild. Like, I've worked in football, I don't know, like 20 years, and I understand my level. Yeah. Like, I understand that I'm so open-minded.
But you've worked in it to know that. I'm talking people that haven't worked in it.
Yeah, your parent.
Every parent that goes to, like, an under-6s game or under-10s game or whatever.
But I'm saying it in reverse. I'm saying, like, I still don't know. I know that I'm not at the level of certain other people. Like, so I make sure I've got that conscious.
Because you've worked in it to know
I
that.
See, I see. Okay,
yeah,
I see.
Junior.
I see.
You've never worked in it. You don't. You think that's easy. Like, how many people do you know that judge the game on outcomes? Like, that isn't.
Yeah.
But it still could be the wrong decision.
Those just the moment.
Yeah, just the moment. Like, there's so much more to that.
Yeah.
That people don't see. It's wild.
Junior Lewis said to me, like, Junior played for Leicester probably about 5 or 6 years before you, maybe.
I know that name.
Back in the day.
You played with Jordan Stewart?
Yeah, probably. You played for Peter Taylor.
Like, yeah, did.
He was saying to
winger,
me...
Winger, like...
Yeah, no, holding midfielder.
Holding midfielder, tall.
Yeah, really tall.
Junior Lewis, I don't know his nickname.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it?
No, that's what they used to... Jurassic, because he's tall and stuff, yeah. yeah. Junior Lewis,
I've heard him with fingers as well.
No, yeah.
Because he's long everywhere. Yeah. But, he was saying it's really important to know what you don't know.
Yes, so true.
And a lot of people are just not aware that they don't understand certain things. And, like, I try to learn a lot about the game, but I understand there's loads of things I need to learn.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of parents think there's nothing, or not just parents.
It's not parents, yeah.
Yeah,
analysts.
It's not just parents. Yeah, it's just everywhere. People you go out and see in the pub or whatever, everyone thinks they understand everything.
Yeah.
And I just...
But, like,
I don't understand it.
You're not gonna
seems so arrogant to me. Like.
Yeah, if your iMac is broken, you're not gonna start just, like, unscrewing it and start, like, fixing the wires and playing with the chips.
It's the only industry.
Yeah.
It's the only industry that everyone is an expert, like, to the point of where, like, and I say that to my kids. I ask them questions and I was, if you don't know the answer, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, luckily for you, I've took the test. I've got most of the answers. For the level that you're at right now,
that's it.
I've got most of the answers. So if you do want to get the cheat code, ask me the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I can't make you do it.
Right.
I can't make you do the stuff. I can give you all the answers, but then you have to deliver on that. But like you're saying, it's like it's not restricted to parents. Like, having worked in different fields and working with analysts, I'm saying, like, listening to people speak, again, that I haven't played, I'm like, there's an emotional understanding that you don't know. Like, you can't explain. Did you hear Pep talk the other day about he knows the feel? He said he can't explain it, he just knows, or he knew at the start of the season. And I was like, it's unexplainable. Everybody has something they can do that they don't know how they do it. Like, when you're driving home on the route that you know, what was the last four red lights or traffic lights? You don't know. I just know how to get here. I just know I got home, or you're doing a maths equation and you don't do the working out. You just know the answer. And it's like, that's the kind of thing in football that people don't appreciate.
And I think parents would help themselves a lot more by, like you said, respecting what they don't know. Oh. You know, they might be listening to this and thinking, oh, well, Les Scott says this to his kid on the way home. Like, they... But, like, yeah, he's won the Premier League twice, you know.
No, but it's not the thing. That's not what I'm because I know my kids.
Oh, right.
I know what works for him. And that's the important part.
Yeah,
for parents.
It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, it's not knowing the game. It's knowing, well, how do you motivate your child, like, or get through to him? How does he learn? Is he a visual learner?
Yeah.
So, or does he need to, like, my youngest can watch the game and learn that way.
Right.
Oldies can't.
Okay.
I probably need to go out on the field with them and then go through the patterns, and then it's muscle memory. So it's understanding that. And if you're criticizing or you're critiquing,
yeah,
how do they absorb that information? then. Can you shout him? Do I need to text him? Okay. I know he's reading it then. I'm talking to you, I know you're not listening. So it's just understanding that. So it isn't me knowing the game. It's me knowing the way my kids would learn and absorb the information.
Okay. Off air, you were talking about your daughter.
Yeah. She's a problem.
So you said she's 9.
Yeah, she if the boys had her in them, they would be playing. She just has to win and be better. The best she can
be. She doesn't play football, does she?
Nah, not really. She wants to start, but again, the commitment is big. So she does a lot of other stuff. So when we said to her, you can't go gymnastics, you can't go netball, you can't go acra, which I don't even know what that is, like a dance class. There's other stuff you want to do, then you can't do them things because you have to do this, then she may not want to go. But athletically, oh my God.
Really?
She's a joke. Because they don't mix now. I mean, they mix at schools now. Mm. Like, sports day, it's not girls and boys. It's just a year.
Yeah. Mm.
So, yeah, she just cleans up.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. It is funny to see, to be fair. But she loves... She can't walk anyway. She just has to run everywhere.
Right.
She's, like, learned herself, taught herself how to somersault and cartwheel and all that stuff. She's active.
But it was interesting what you said about like your wife and saying that maybe she's experienced the boys being so focused on football and she didn't really want that for your daughter.
She wants that connection that I have with the boys. So she plays netball. So it's not like we're not allowing her to play football or anything. Like, it was just, well, my wife played netball to a decent level.
Right.
So you have that in common. And again, the way we're talking about parents and coaches in football, it's netball as well. It's every sport. It's like, ooh, coaching is an art, and I appreciate that. But like, just because you may have played doesn't mean you can teach, because the things that you hear are the same. It's like what did I hear the other day? I was watching a game. This is going back to football now, and I just heard like go past him, or beat him, or. I'm just saying, well, how? It's like saying score. Yeah. Like, well, how?
It's not very helpful.
Yeah, defend. Mm. Like, and that's kind of netball. While I'm hearing them talking netball, I'm like, oh, so it's the same. It's coaching. The methods are the same for most people. It's just like you're just shouting stuff.
Had coaches that talk in like cliches and stuff, it just goes straight over my head straight away, and I just lose respect for that person a little bit. Like,
but again, but
you're
say,
not thinking, you're not, you
yeah,
know?
But do they know that if would you lose respect to him if he said he didn't know? Would you lose respect for him then? Because he might not know
how
to deliver it.
How many of them think they don't know?
Oh, yeah, true.
How many are aware that they don't know?
But I've had some good ones, especially at my youngest at Stoke. I've spoke to them about the game, so when we do the reviews, and they've kind of said this, that, and the other, and I'm saying, he may not know how to do that. Have you showed him? He's like, oh, no. I'm like, well, he just may not know it. Like, how do you improve? Do you know how to improve that then? The thing that you're asking him to get better at, what is the plan to improve that? Oh, we don't know. Because it's not a technical or tactical aspect that you can actually see. It's like, say, a mentality one. Mm. Saying, well, then there's got to be a way to improve it. And if you don't know how to do it, how's he going to know? He's like 10, 11.
Times they ask, oh, we want him to improve that, but then not giving him the tools or putting him in the same.
But again, it's not like they're not doing it on purpose, but it's just, well, if there's no plan, if there's no, well, do these things and it improves that. But if none of that, then how does he improve? Like, I don't know. How does anyone improve if you don't know how to do it?
Yeah. Let's Google.
There you go. Google's got the answers, isn't it? Google will have something. You'll find something on there.
I'm interested with your experience coaching. So when did you go to Man City as a coach?
So I retired in 2017 and I've kind of got the role as the loans development coach in the end of 2017.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like kind of like mentoring, and it's not like coach every down the pitch. It was like, well, these are the players that are on loan. These are players you're going to work in. Yeah, these are players you're going to be working with, help them develop and shape like the early part of their career, basically. Because I think, like, if I 18 to 22, you kind of know. Like, if you can kind of create good habits then, they'll continue. And then they're responsible then. I know they're responsible anyway, but then they're kind of responsible at 23, 24. You're kind of like, well, you know what works and you know what doesn't. So do more of that and less of that.
And like seeing Manchester City from like the academy side of things, like what was that like? How is it as an academy?
Oh, yeah, it's super efficient.
Really?
Again, could... this isn't a Man City thing. I just think more academies can do more.
All right.
To develop players, to give players careers. I think, on a whole, most academies are developing players for their first team. And that's where I think that stupid minimal percentage comes in. Where I think if you develop players to have careers, I think you just get more out of it anyway, rather than more satisfaction, but I think you'll get better outcomes.
I see it a bit different with, we always talk about Chelsea, but I think they're trying to develop players that they can sell to fund their first team.
Now they are, yeah. Chelsea's a good one. Chelsea and City are the same in terms of
beat
that.
Beat the financial, financial fair play system as well.
But it helps have careers, so it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Whether it is the reason or not, it's still helping players have careers.
The issue with I have with the way they're doing it is they're only developing certain types of players. They're really like focused on agility, tens, dribbling.
Yeah. Yeah,
tens, wingers and fullbacks going backwards. So I think they miss out on a lot of the fundamental stuff, like positioning and showing for the ball in the right areas and stuff like that, receiving.
Yeah.
Not miss out on it completely, obviously, but I think it's less prioritised.
Yeah, I think that. But again, is that a bad thing if they're producing the players? Because if you do it the other way, then you're not looking at the technical players. There's always going to be an argument for the other side of the coin. Yeah. But as I said, if the percentage of players they're producing is going up, then it's a good thing because it's all right Chelsea doing it the way, say, you want them to do it the other way. But if no one's looking for them players, because everyone's looking for tens, wingers, fullbacks. So
they're more valuable because
they're more valuable. Because it's more money. So again, it's not a case of Chelsea doing it wrong or City doing it wrong. They're just doing it the way that is the market.
Mm.
It's the market now. Everyone's looking for that. Like a 10. The 10 wasn't a position. It was just you just played in midfield or you up front.
from what I perceive, City are doing it in a more holistic way than Chelsea. I think there is more focus on like receiving the ball, passing the ball, things like that from a younger age. That's
maybe. I don't know enough of the areas. I don't know enough of City and Chelsea, to be fair. I haven't been in City for a while since I've been to England, so I don't spend as much time around the academy, but again,
so they're still producing, they've still got plenty of dribblers coming through at City, like you've had Sancho, Foden, people like that. But they do seem to have like a lot more like Spanish ideology that has come in.
Yeah, the methodology has changed. And again, the structure. So I think that helps the players that get into Man City's first team.
Yeah.
Like 100%. It helps because
Rico Lewis.
Yeah, like he's amazing. But he's only ever played the way he's playing now.
So potentially it's not going to help others make.
It's not going to help others that have to go elsewhere when like your fullback doesn't go inside. So,
but that's gonna, because it's a more successful way what Pep and now Arteta are doing. That's gonna be normalised. It's not gonna stay where fullbacks are always having to stay wide.
Oh yeah, of course. But there's gonna be a caliber of player that
kind of ahead of their time a little bit, like the players that they're gonna produce, but not far ahead of their time. Yeah, it's gonna evolve very quickly.
Yeah, and you're ahead of your time, but that is probably the most important thing in the game is timing. So if you're ahead of it, that means your timing's off, which means you don't get an opportunity to showcase what you're good at, and then all of a sudden you're out of the game. So,
but I think it's going to evolve quicker than you.
You're still going to miss a batch of players.
Yeah, that's inevitable.
That's what I'm saying. So it's still missing out some players because it's not there yet. Until it's there and it's more prominent for everyone to do that. Like,
it's kind of for the game to improve, I think.
What do you think the game's better now? I don't know. I'm just asking.
I mean,
how you see the game.
It's definitely better, but everything evolves.
And you think there's more players, better players now?
I do, yeah. If you watch like 10 years ago, remember when Swansea came up with Rodgers?
Yeah.
Like when you'd analyse it, like no one could believe like the team was taking short goal kicks, playing out from pressure. Everyone does that in the league now. Yeah, everyone in the league below.
But that's a false...
That's how quickly football evolves.
Yeah, but it's a false narrative because not everyone's capable of doing that.
You mean players make mistakes?
Yeah, but I'm saying if you could do that, you would be at the level that warrants you doing that every time. So say if you, for instance, as a coach, you got to say, I know he's only capable of doing that, playing out from the back, say, 50% of the time. But I'm doing it 100% of the time. So why would I risk that to hinder him? Because then we're not saying, well, he can do it 50% of the time. We're judging him on the times that he doesn't do it.
Yeah, but players are forced to now improve at that. So what they could
do... But there's a cap again. So what if you can't do it? What if your limit isn't that? Your strength is these areas.
So, all right, let me ask you. Do you think that cap, which I agree with, yeah. I think that's there in all players, yeah. in all aspects. Do you think that cap raises higher because you've started from a very younger age and you've had more experience? Because I think now players start younger, and this is why, like, they can do things with the ball that are amazing because they're practicing from such a younger age. So that improves that their cap is pushed higher. That's what I think.
I just think you get to your cap earlier. Your cap is your cap. If you push your cap, then it's not your cap.
No, I think...
But if your cap is, say, 8 out of 10...
What, you don't think that eventual highest limit can be higher if you start playing from 5 years old to if you start playing from 10 years old? That's an extreme example to try and make my point. Like,
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think if you're exposed to doing it more often, say, then you get to the cap earlier, 100%, but there's still going to be a level because there's an emotional level that is needed. So I know there's a player in the Premier League that struggles with the crowds.
Really?
Huh?
I was just really.
Yeah,
wow.
So that struggles with the crowd aspect. Yeah. So regardless of how good he is, that is still the cap because it's the 40,000 people that are impacting him.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not the actual technical aspect of receiving it on the back foot, playing it today. It's like, well, next week he's playing in 60,000. It's okay when it's a championship, yeah. when it's 25 and 30, but when it's 40, 50, 60, wow. that's the cap.
Interesting, really interesting.
I'd like to come back to this point and discuss it more, but just on this about crowds, because this has always fascinated me, like, what do you reckon a parent can do to prepare their child to play in front of crowds?
Can't.
Or what about coaches? I mean, Arteta's playing like Anfield, like Liverpool music during training.
I love Arteta, what he's doing. Yeah, that's crazy to me.
I think you can do that at that level. I don't think you can do that at a younger age group.
Nothing can really prepare them for.
You just gotta. Yeah, I don't know what
being
it is.
In that situation.
It's another skill. Yeah. It's another attribute. Being able to handle pressure.
It's just repetition, because again, what is it? Practice makes permanent.
That was your slogan, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, well, if you know you can do that because you've practiced it enough times, then you just get comfortable with doing that practice rather than in that
environment.
See, yeah. with the young kids, like, we see it where there might be a kid that can do a really good skill in training, they can play a certain way when they train, when it goes into a game, it's a new pressure for them, and then something like freaks them out, and then they can't perform their technique as well.
100%. I've seen it in reverse. Like, coaches always said to me, you can't turn it on and off. You can. If you're good enough, you can.
Yeah.
I've seen players do it.
But in some ways, that's a skill. So let's say that the parent exposes their child to, like, team football at, like, under 7, and they're playing with a referee who's wearing kit, and there's maybe even just, like, 10 parents on the side. And they're kind of... The parents are super well-behaved these days, but they're still clapping. There's a certain element of pressure in that, like, game. And then through the youth journey, like, the crowds get a little bit bigger, like, the pressures sort of, but it's staggered. So then by the time you get to the stadiums, you might be playing about in front of 1,000 fans, and then it builds. So then that's my understanding of how players end up performing.
Being able to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that's my theory.
Yeah. And it's not a bad theory or wrong.
It's not for everyone, though, isn't it?
Again, because what if you're exposing your kid to a team environment when he's not ready for that environment, he's not ready to be in front of 10. He's only good enough to play with his brother in the back garden. He exposes him to 10 and then he doesn't enjoy it because...
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, at 15, he's only ever heard claps. He's never heard a boo.
Oh, yeah.
This happened to Chelsea's youth team. They played against AFC Wimbledon in the Youth Cup. And I remember Joe Edwards, who's working at Everton, or he just left with Lampard, but he did a talk explaining how the Chelsea players couldn't cope with playing against just a little crowd at Wimbledon that were like...
I worked with a player, he's an international now, and he was on loan and he said to me, he was warming up, he said, all I was motivated by was not getting booed when I went on.
Oh, wow.
I said, yeah, you've never heard that. He said, I didn't know that was... But he's home fans. Oh. And he said, I never knew that was a thing.
Mm.
And that was always his motivation.
Yeah.
For the game that he was going on in. He's 19, maybe 20. And he's been exposed to so much stuff. And he played games, but the first time he was experiencing it was 20. Getting booed, potentially getting booed. And that was his kind of motivation not to do that.
During the COVID, there was big talks on that, wasn't it? Because he took away the crowds.
Yeah.
And players performed differently.
Yeah. Oh,
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And it was the reverse as well. Because some players need the crowds.
Some players need that, oh, I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
That's
and then the others actually done well because there wasn't the element of the boo or the pressure of the crowd.
That is a massive thing. That changes momentum in an instant. Like, I know I'm going to miscontrol it and it's ooh. Every time that comes, it's like, oh, I can't miscontrol this. And that's all you're thinking about. And then you're not seeing the next pass because you're just thinking about controlling it.
Right.
They're the things that people won't know until you've experienced that. It's like, well, how do you deal with that in order to make the next pass? Because all of a sudden you're worried about your touch. It's good, but it's not in time to play the next pass, which hinders your outcomes and your decisions.
Do the academies have like psychologists in the clubs and things now?
Everyone does.
Do they talk to them about these sorts of things to try and build like mental resilience?
Yeah, I would guess so. I would imagine it's not the same though. But again, it's not the same. Yeah, because
be
you can't feeling.
Yeah.
And it might be okay for some because they may be able to visualize that, but it's different when you hear it.
Like
different
you said, noise. In training, it's not the same feeling as you misplacing a pass or miscontrolling.
There's no outcome, there's no consequence, and I know.
Now in a Premier League game,
as much as you try to recreate like the intensity of a game.
And here's an example of knowing that it's different is how you hear people talk about Anfield to every other, and Anfield hasn't got the most fans. But when you hear people talk about playing there, it's different because it is different. So European nights, the sound's different. So you can't prepare. And these are players that actually play. Mm. Premier League players, you see them going in Europe and you're like, ooh, it's different that. Because, it's a different outcome. It's a different noise that you're hearing.
Mm. What's been your... what's it been like working with the England under-21s?
Yeah, it's good. Because this is probably the most coaching I've done. I don't really want to coach long-term. Like, I look to myself as a manager.
Right.
I never say never, but I don't see that. But, yeah, coaching. And I can honestly say Lee Carsley probably has the best relationship with his players I've ever seen. Out of any coach I've worked with or worked for or seen, it's like I never see a group of players, like, absorb information and look at him and view him the way they do. Always view any coach, to be fair. It's mad. He's got such a rapport with the players, which is, I don't think he can be taught that. I think it's just in him. And I know him, so I know it's genuine.
Is that more for the stuff he does off the pitch, probably?
Everything. He's a great coach and stuff, detail and stuff like that, but just he understands how he can...
Impact players.
Yeah, and just like get the most out of him to kind of... He needs an arm around him. He needs me to expose him in front of everyone. And just that understanding is just mad to see that he has. Because again, it's like if you go back to coaching, I think Pep wasn't the only person on his coaching badges. But he obviously delivers it in a way that is unique to the people that he's coaching. And that's kind of like Kaiser's, like he's unique to the way he's delivering his messages. He's not the only one that knows that information.
Yeah.
But he knows how to use the information and when to use it. And that's probably the bit that, well, that's for me, that's the bit that separates coaches because they all learn the same things. It's just the way they're delivering them to the people that they're coaching.
And what's the group of our 21s like at the moment? Like, technically, tactically?
Is there one or two that you think are going to make a big jump?
Yeah, but there's always that. Like, I worked with them a few years ago and it was like Phil, Mason.
Who would you pick out now?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. And I don't want to name two or three. So, Emile's in there, Anthony Gordon, Mark Gooey, Taylor Harwood-Bellis, Luke Thomas is in there, Curtis Jones. Tommy Doyle, Harvey Elliott, like Flo Balogun, who's top goal scorer in Europe on the 21s or something like that. Like, there's so many that could have it and step up. It wouldn't surprise me if 8, 9, 10 of them do, but it's not guaranteed. Like, I think I had one under 21 cap. So there's no process that means you have.
No, of course.
You know what I mean? Like, who's the... Is it Eddie?
Eddie, I think he's
got the most.
Yeah.
But most again, he's not got a senior, so I'm sure he would swap all them for the senior. So again, it's...
I think there's more like continuity now between the...
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. They're like,
less
you get to
that
see
someone's going
to
play one...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One game like you and then go and play.
Yeah, but again, that's like, it's hard because it's viewed as 21, so you're next in line. But you're not, because there could be 24, 25, 26-year-olds in the league that warrant that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So when you, they even the lads probably view it that way, is like, well, I'm kind of fifth choice position or in my position for England, but there's probably 4 or 5 players in the league that are probably ahead of you due to being too old to play for 21s, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just managing that. But now the experience and the talent, it's a joke. It is crazy, and they're so hungry to learn, to be fair to them.
Really?
So yeah, so dedicated to being the best they can.
What is your actual role with the 21s?
Assistant coach.
Oh, you are, right.
But in terms of what I do, like, so I would work with detail, like, so player specific and unit stuff, and not the general player of the team that's created by Lee and Tim and Ash. But in terms of, well, how could I possibly make him a little bit better, more efficient at doing what he's doing?
Yeah,
it's just understanding that. Like, I think most players and people see that only forward thinking players are creative in their thought process, but I'm saying no, defenders are quite creative. So did some work with someone and said, well, you only receive the ball like this, so now I know you can't turn that way, so I'm only going to mark you on that side, and now you're restricted, so now I can half gamble on that side because you can't turn there because your body won't allow you to if you receive it like that. He's like, oh, defenders think like that. I'm like, yeah, you think like forwards, but just in different aspects. So it's just helping them aware that
that's really good,
you know what I mean, making them aware that you can think the same and players think the same without them being able to shout it or know it, and just thinking that way.
What is your feeling on, like, England, or in fact, even just like defending in general in like modern football now?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of coaching are taking away the attributes of the defender, the individual attributes. Like, it's, I think most defences and defensive setups are set up the same way, regardless of the attributes. We all want our teams to defend one way, but we're not asking wingers to attack the same way if they don't have the same attributes. So, say, for instance...
Maybe Maguire, like, defending deep.
Yeah, but he's good at what he does and good at certain things, so don't expose him to the things he may not be a strong at. But if it was a winger, so say, for instance, you wouldn't ask Anthony to attack the same way Marcus Rashford done, because they have different attributes.
I see the other side of it, though, because as a coach, you want to have, like, your own philosophy imprinted on your team. Like.
Yeah, of course, but your philosophy is only... based on, or should only be judged on, the players you have at your disposal. So if your philosophy doesn't work for the players you have, then it's the wrong philosophy.
I remember not too long ago, you were saying that there isn't really a requirement so much anymore for defenders to be as good 1v1 defending anymore.
Yeah, because there's more cover usually, generally.
And chances are just like 3 on goal now, isn't it? There's no delaying. I don't see anyone delaying play. Like, I think...
I would say defending is more team-structured rather than before. Yeah. It was more like... You would always have a battle between a fullback and a winger. Always.
Always, like, yeah. That's the best part of playing fullback for me, was like a 1v1 for a certain aspect of the game.
You miss it, don't you? But yeah. I like the tactical elements that will come in. Like, I really like the fact... Obviously, Trent...
But what I'm saying is you like it when it's for your team 1v1. You want to create 1v1s.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But that's what I'm saying. So you've got to understand that there's some defenders that like that aspect, being 1v1 defensively.
Wembisaka.
That was good.
Whatever it is.
But wouldn't you rather, as a coach, wouldn't you rather have the security of knowing your fullback had cover? Regardless of if he's the best 1v1 defender in the world. Like, wouldn't you rather have cover?
It depends who he's playing against, and in regards of, well, if I know he's stronger at his weakness than his opponent, let's expose them to that. So like I would teach players or say to players, understanding your strengths and weaknesses of your opponent, and you may need to play to your weakness, because if your weakness is stronger than theirs, you're going to have better outcomes. So if I'm fast and I'm playing against someone fast, I'm not going to run him. So it doesn't matter how fast I am. But if I'm good, if I'm crap at something, I know he's worse, let's do that. Because I'm going to have better outcomes. You know what I mean? I'm going to win more duels doing what we're not good at rather than the thing I think I'm good at, but you're better at. Surely we do that. And that's what I think has taken away from...
You think about the game very logically.
It's just simple process.
Yeah, really interesting.
But when you hear it, but like, people don't think like that until you hear it. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But if that was a defending, or we're talking about strikers, which we let them be creative or let them do the kind of their own thing. But I'm saying some defenders need that. Like, say, like Liverpool, Van Dijk. I probably doubt anyone goes past him 1v1. But you're not, how many times is he 1v1? You don't expose him to that. And you're nullifying the things he could be better at, which impacts the team. You know what I mean? I'll be like, I'd want to expose my team or my players to what they are good at. And defenders can defend. They're not just people that are just robots and understand the system. It's like, no, they enjoy defending. Some of them are really good at it. So let's let them do it.
Yeah. I think it might be a way for you to get more like attack-minded players in the team as well.
100%. Like, listen, I'm not here to fix football. It's great to watch and it's enjoyable, but I'm just saying it can't be everyone, oh, we want to high line press, high press, and it's like, well, that doesn't suit these players. And then when you get past that, they're exposed to their worst element of their game.
Yeah, but and you can't recover. But from a development point of view, we can identify kids who are fast and strong and say that, you know, we can then work on their technique, and so we can like develop them to have those abilities where you can play with a high line. Because if we say,
can't
like
go the other way, huh? Can't you go the other way?
What do you mean?
Develop players that are technically really good and try and help them with the physical attributes.
Depends what the cap is, though. Again, what's
same
room?
Same with the other way. Yeah, same with the other way.
It's more where's more room to improve? Is it a physical element or is it a tactical element of their game? It's like, well, where do you see the biggest progression in order for the level they want to play at? Because there's only a certain tactical level you need to play in some of the leagues. Premier League, you need to be 8, 7, 8, 9, 10 in what, 3 of the 5 maybe?
Yeah.
League One, League Two, you probably don't. So it's understanding that, and it's like not every player's going to have that. Not every player can be as fast as Dama Traore. Because if you could, they would be. We'd create that. So not every player can be as intelligent or technical as Kevin De Bruyne. Like, it's understanding that. But because it is a physical attribute, or it's not a physical attribute, we don't value that. Like, I say to my kids, if it was all about pace, Adama Traoré would be second best in the world, next to Mbappé. Like, for me, Mbappé's pace isn't his best attribute. It's decision-making. Because there's players as fast as him. Adama Traoré is as fast as Mbappe, but the decisions they make are so different.
Yeah,
the outcomes.
Darwin Nunes, mate.
Yeah, like, what I'm saying. It's players that are fast, but if you're not making the decisions based on your attributes, then it's not going to help you. It's going to hinder you.
But like we're saying, there is a cap to your speed that you'll get to genetically
And your technique.
Yeah, technique is more. The cap isn't a level; it's a consistency. So it's how many times can you do that, make that pass.
There was a saying I read the other day. It was like, great players don't get better, they just get more consistent.
Yeah, like, again, I agree, totally agree with that. It's like, if you look at Jude Bellingham, he's going to be one of the best.
Yeah.
What does he do that you haven't seen? He just does it all.
He does, yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
He makes the right decision for whether he's on the field. I seen him the other day doing a trick wide.
Yeah.
But he's in the wide area. I've never seen him do that set midfield, but he's got the ability to do it. And then when I see him as a player, and like, he was the highest player one time, and I see him absorb the ball like a 9, I'm thinking, he's not doing anything I ain't seen players do. He just does it every time. And that's the difference. He's doing what he should do every time. Like, if you compare him to, say, what, Ruben Loftus-Cheek? Could he do stuff that Ruben can't? He just probably does it a little bit more. and lucky enough with injuries, because Ruben's been unfortunate with injuries, but he's another one that I was so excited to see and just go on, and because I thought you can do everything.
Yeah.
And you do stuff a lot of the time. It's just been unfortunate. But with Jude, it's like...
more consistent.
It's not even, but again, it sounds like I'm saying Ruben isn't. Again, it was just like he just does the right thing, and it's never... there's never a wrong time to do the right thing, is there?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's been such a great conversation. Really, really appreciated your time today. I think for football enthusiasts, for parents with kids, I think, they really enjoy listening to that.
I've learned loads. Yeah. I've learned loads. So I'm sure parents and our listeners will.
Cool, man.
Definitely.
Appreciate you guys. Keep it up, man.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Cool.